Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 51. Jeff Lowe, Trebons, Ken Jack. Big show. It's a big blockbuster movie you're reviewing today. Solo, A Star Wars Story. Got some news before that. And then we're taking movie pitches. We added, like, I think over 100 of them. Very elaborate pitches. Wasn't a ton because it took some effort. So we respect the effort. I think we're going to read, like, 10 to 12 here. And we're going to roast them. Or if they're good, we're going to like them. We actually did a skit with one of them already today involving Francis, PFT, Coley, Devlin, called The Rome Alone, and it's about Jim Rome Home Alone. It was pretty good.
As good as it sounds.
Yeah, so we'll release that today if you're listening on Thursday. Is tomorrow the first day of June? 30 days? No, there's 31 days.
No, Friday. Yeah.
Thursday, May 31st. All right, let's get right into it. Some news. We don't talk about MoviePass a lot on here because we don't like, you know, no free ads here. But this is interesting enough to talk about. MoviePass is going to open up MoviePass Films, a production or company that's going to release movies, which could potentially save their brand. Do you think MoviePass releasing movies is going to save the company that is floundering money-wise and is just on this really nasty downward spiral?
Do you think they woke up, went to a meeting and just looked around the room and it's like, guys, we got to start making money now. Turns out giving people unlimited movies per day for $9 a month is a bad deal for us.
It's one of those things where I don't get how they ever made money in the first place, like Amazon, how they turn like no profit every single year and yet still make a fuck ton of money because like the stocks or something like that. I don't get it. I don't get how they're
like
supposed
Tivana.
To make money. Yeah, exactly.
Remember Tivana? Tivana stores at the mall, nobody was ever in them. It's like, how does Tivana make money? And it turns out they didn't. Jeff, I don't know about this. I like the concept of more movie distribution digitally that I can watch at home. However, some of the Netflix ones have been good and some of the other ones haven't been. It's going to be a battle to compete with Netflix for good movies, and I just don't see anyone being able to pay more than Netflix for those types of films right now, if I'm interpreting the article right.
Yeah, how do they get the money to get an even remotely good movie? Like, what type of movies do you think they'll be syndicating?
So, they teamed up with The Orchard, and they have a movie coming out on Friday, actually.
Ooh.
Called American Animals with Evan Peters. Not bad. Ann Dowd, not bad. I think she won an Emmy. Or a Globe? I think she won something for...
You won an Emmy.
Now you devalued it.
Got a second one, too. Got a second one coming to the office soon, yeah. Two-time Emmy winner, which means nothing, apparently. Blake Jenner's in this movie. So there is a movie that MoviePass is releasing with The Orchard. So maybe that's what they have to do. Maybe they have to team up with people. But, I mean, it's a great service, obviously, because, I mean, when we go to the theaters are fucking packed. And they are all people swiping that red card. So I know they're losing money, but I think they're losing money because they're driving people to the theater. So it's time for people to figure out how to make this work, because it's obviously helping out ticket sales.
Do you get access to this service if you have MoviePass, or is it an additional charge?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I don't think it comes with the standard like $10 thing, right?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't make them more money if it just came with the standard $10 thing, right? They have to.
But they could sell ads in it or something, right?
Yeah, they could do something like that on the website. Give people the website, sell ads.
I mean, bottom line is, we all want MoviePass to stay in business, right? So as long as I don't think this is the right move necessarily for them.
We do
money.
as a fucking podcast, because most people who go and see movies on our pod,
MoviePass.
They
people.
Use MoviePass. Like, they're like, well, thank God for your podcast MoviePass. I would have never gone to movies anymore.
I mean, how much would you realistically pay more per month to keep them in business?
Me, a lot.
Double.
$20.
Triple.
I'm trying to think of like what price point would like break me into like, all right, I'm not just not going to renew my subscription. And I don't really know. Maybe for me, especially because we're in a movie podcast, like 45. But if I was like a regular
45 a month.
Yeah. Because then I'm thinking like maybe roughly like mid-tier gym prices.
So you'd have to see 33 movies a year.
Yeah, that's. I mean, even for being a big movie guy, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a higher price point for me. I'm thinking for a regular person, it's probably somewhere a little bit lower than that, like $25, $30.
Yeah,
per month.
I'd pay around $400. I don't know.
I thought you had to go a month.
Wait, how do I? How much?
$400 a month. I was like, is this an insurance plan now?
I mean, I would pay enough to make it where I have to. If I can make it up by seeing 25 to 30 movies, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
because right now we have to see like 7. Like, it's not much. Like, living in New York, if you don't have MoviePass and you go to more than 7 movies a year, I mean, plain and simple, you're just an idiot. Unless you're really rich, then who gives a shit? But, like, if you're someone like us who is, you know, we're not living in, like, high-rises in, like, lower Manhattan, MoviePass makes sense. Like, you're really stupid if you're not doing it at that point.
Yeah.
I have one final thought on this. MoviePass is one of those rare instances where something good happens to you as a consumer.
Yes. That's very true.
Normally, as a consumer, I'm just used to having bad things happen to me, either my product breaking or warranty expiring, then my product breaking or prices being raised here and there. And it's like finally one thing comes out that the company is the loser in this and not the consumer itself. So yes. From that standpoint, I like the product because it feels like you're winning when you buy MoviePass. And this is not a plug for MoviePass. It just is what it is.
We talked about like who this is for. And I think you mentioned it, Trill, when we first talked about this. I mean, the model is made for people who don't use it. Like, that's what they were kind of banking on, are people not using it. And we actually, Big Cat said it, like, one of our first days we were talking about MoviePass. He's like, I'm the type of person this was marketed to. Someone, he's like, I've been an ESPN Insider subscriber for years. He's like, I don't fucking use ESPN Magazine or Insider. I mean, that's the same thing. But people have used it.
Yep. It's the big box gym strategy.
Exactly.
We try to sign up as many people as possible, and then they just never return.
Except they only targeted kudos. Fucking CrossFit people, basically, in this scenario.
They ran their numbers wrong, and it turns out that only people who liked movies subscribed to the free movie card, which is wild. Couldn't have seen that one coming.
If only they had, like, Jack Welch or somebody as shitty as CEO. Who is that? Who we were trashing the other day on Fortnite?
Jack Welch was pretty successful as a CEO, I think.
Who was it? We were talking about a CEO when we were playing Fortnite.
If you're wondering why we don't do Fortnite streams anymore, it's because we just talk about CEOs now. That's why we're just not very interesting.
Travis, who's the Uber guy? Travis Kalsenek or something?
Yeah.
I have such a trash passenger score.
What's your
score?
It's like 4.74, something like that.
Why?
What's yours, Ken Jack?
Probably because I don't tip as much as I should.
I don't really use Uber. I use Juno in the city just because it's like fixed rate and way cheaper. Yes. But my Juno ride is definitely, our Juno rider score is definitely really good.
So you think yours is bad at a 4.7 something?
Yes.
Mine's a 4.58.
What did you guys
do?
That's
really bad.
That's really.
You probably talk too much.
I don't want to talk to the.
Ooh.
I don't say a single word, and I just tip at the end of the ride.
So I take a lot.
I need to tip.
I take a lot from the city to Hoboken and vice versa, and I never like the way they go. And so I'm pretty, like, instructive with directions.
Okay. You deserve this.
Yeah, so I probably do. I do complain a lot.
Forget, I always forget that you can tip, and then I leave it there, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'll tip later, and I never get around. Dude, it's good practice to tip.
I just tip them.
These Uber drivers are really committed.
I tip them 15%. They drop me off 10 blocks where I'm supposed to go, and I say, thank you so much. This is exactly where I'm supposed to be, and get out, just like everybody else. And I got a perfect score. That's all you got to do.
Nice.
So Rideshare, the movie, reviewing it next week. We wanted to find something that would be accessible for everybody, and that wasn't an old movie, because that's what you have to figure out with old movies. Not everyone is immediately streamable, and we don't want people paying like $20 on iTunes for Batman and Robin. So, though, not a bad purchase. Nah, next up, and this is news that we all laughed at when we saw it. Zack Snyder's next movie is apparently going to be Fountainhead. I mean, who has not wanted the Ayn Rand Zack Snyder crossover? That's my question.
Hey, Ken Jack, what are your thoughts?
So, first of all, if you're excited for this movie, then fuck you. That's my number one and only really thought on the actual movie. But it made me think, what would be the worst possible books to be adapted into a movie? And I'm trying to think from like elementary school, middle school, what books I read that I hated the most. So, Ethan Frome, which was made into a movie, which sucked. The Pearl, Old Man and the Sea, Catcher in the Rye, A Separate Piece, Great Expectations. The Giver, which they made a movie for relatively recently, which stunk.
Oh, it was fucking terrible.
And Of Mice and Men, starring, who was in that? Malkovich and Gary, forget his last name. But all those movies, I'm just trying to think, what do you think would be the worst childhood book to be adapted into a movie?
So are these books from AP English, Ken Jack?
You didn't read these in your standard dumb person English class?
The only ones I... Dang. I mean, I guess after the 99 minutes debacle of the episode 51, I deserved that. I remember reading The Good Place or The Good Earth. Not The Good
what?
Place. The Good
Earth. The Good Place with Ted Danson.
The Good Earth, right?
I got no idea what you're talking about.
A Separate Piece, but that was more of a short story. I enjoyed that one.
What was your least favorite elementary, middle school book or high school?
That's the problem is I like to read, but I can't remember what I read in high school.
So did you read any of those ones I listed at all?
Yeah, I read Separate Piece.
Separate Piece stunk. Finney and whatever, and then, jouncing the limb.
Then everybody had to read To Kill a Mockingbird. And yeah, Gregory Peck did a good job in that one.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was definitely a good movie and a good book too, like an interesting book. But there's shitty books.
That was
like
a great book.
Ethan Frome is one of the worst books ever written. Ever. And I think almost everybody, at least relatively close to my age, I know has read it. I don't know if you did, Jeff, in middle high school.
I know that I talked about in the pod before, the book I read in middle school that got turned into a movie was Triple X. That was really a fantastic novel. The Giver was released in 2014, and it had an insane cast.
Yeah, was it Bridges?
And it was a fucking terrible movie. It had Jeff Bridges, Katie Holmes, Meryl Streep, Alexander Skarsgård, and Taylor Swift.
By all accounts, should have been good.
I mean, it had a lot of big names in that movie, and it was
stinker.
It was not very good. 35% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Did you ever see the Ethan Frome movie with Liam Neeson?
Which one was that?
It's literally just called Ethan Frome. Ethan Frome, I'll say this 1,000 times over. This is the worst book ever written ever. It's a Liam Neeson, I think it might have been a TV movie in the 90s. It is like one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is, 1993.
So all the listeners out there that have read Ethan Frome, this is going to give you like some sort of like flashback, but The Pickle Dish is the worst thing. Like that is ingrained into my brain how many times they say the phrase pickle dish over and over again. I just, stop, don't do this. Why make an Ayn Rand book to screen? Like why would you bring that to screen? There's no reason. Nobody's asking for this. And who wants Zack Snyder to do it?
I mean, one of the least ambitious crossover events in movie history. Speaking of crossovers.
I did do 10th grade. We got to do a book report and we got to pick which book we wanted to use. And it was a cool teacher. So they're like, any book you want to pick. So I went into like the book cabinet at home, also known as a shelf. Yeah. And I picked Rising Sun, the 1992 Michael Crichton novel. Not a good book for a book report. Not appropriate material. I believe they made a movie out of that with Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, that was a good one, I think. I thought it was going to be your medieval mice book series that you're talking about last
Redwall?
Episode. Yeah.
Oh, Redwall was so good.
Why didn't you write the book report on that?
Redwall. Okay, you know, I guess I didn't want to go to the library, so I just picked what we had in the house, and Rising Sun was there. which I think like one of my parents bought some Michael Crichton novels after Jurassic Park came big and just never read them.
All right.
Did you know, though, cinematic history-wise, Michael Crichton wrote and directed the 1973 film Westworld, which is what the hit TV series Westworld is based off of.
Wow. That was a good movie. It was a very good movie, actually. It was that old-school Russian dude that played the killer Yul robot Brenner. Guy. Man, yeah, Yul Brynner did the Russian version of the cowboy man. Man in Black or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
Any more fun facts, Trill?
No, we're done.
Okay.
Podcast over.
Just double jest it. That's been the pod. Comic casting news. Jamie Foxx as Spawn, and then the Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio hype continues to grow. Thoughts? Any immediate thoughts here? We talked about Spawn last week being one of the worst comic book movies of all time.
Yeah, Spawn, the movie was bad, but I love Jamie Foxx. I think he has the opportunity to kill this role. Spawn, the character, was really popular in the mid-90s, and then it fizzled out. So you haven't heard much of Spawn, but I think it could be really good. I think it might lend itself well to the advanced special effects we now have in 2018. One of the really, really, I mean, one of many bad things in the original Spawn were some of the worst special effects you had ever heard.
Ever.
Seen.
Ever by far. So. How bad was that cape? The cape, I think, was the worst CGI effect ever
Everything
made.
Everything was bad. Oh, it was bad, and then like I think he went to hell, and just the animated CGI hell looked bad. It was a bad movie all the way around. And Jamie Foxx is great, so I have high hopes for Spawn. I mean, not too high. I hope it's a decent movie, but I think it can be.
What about his belt that like came out and stopped the lady from kicking him? Do you remember that part? In the original Spawn, it was some of the worst effects ever made. He had like sort of the pre-Iron Man scene at one point when he was like in a fight where like his Spawn face mask like materializes over his face and it looks like just absolute claymation shit. The whole movie was very, very bad, but it's like you said, Jamie Foxx is like a kind of he's a one-of-a-kind actor, so I think he definitely has the chops to do it.
And Ken Jack, this is a Blumhouse production.
Oh, I know. I'm aware.
Yeah.
Blumhouse, they have the money.
They put the Blumhouse A-team on this one that delivers the good Blumhouse films, or are they going to give us the Truth or Dare Blumhouse team?
So, from what I've heard from the advanced reviews on Upgrade, which is a Blumhouse joint, the effects on it are apparently very, very good. Like, not like revolutionary, but like very, very well done effects. So, I guess if they have that guy or that team or whatever do the same SFX on Spawn, but I mean, sky's the limit, as long as it has a half-decent story. It's kind of a very sad story, right? Isn't he like a USMC guy and like he dies and his best friend like has sex with his wife?
I don't know, but what I do want to bring up also is Spawn was created by Todd McFarlane. And Todd McFarlane is the guy who bought Barry Bonds' 73rd home run ball for $500,000.
That's what he did with that Spawn check?
Yeah, the Spawn money bought the Barry Bonds baseball. It's pretty wild to think about.
How much would you spend? What's your price point on the Barry Bonds ball?
Was it him who was threatening to like put a Sharpie asterisk on it or something? Or am I thinking about something else?
I don't remember.
I don't know. That's fucking really lame, though.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
I don't think it was him. I think it was something. I can't remember.
What do you think of Mysterio, Jake G, in the first fan art photo as Mysterio in his little fishbowl head?
Yeah, Mysterio is a hard character. He's not one of the Spider-Man villains I've ever gotten super excited for, but it's good to see Jake Gyllenhaal in a comic book movie like this, this high profile. And they did the Vulture really well, and the Vulture was not one of those Spider-Man villains I cared about either. So I have the utmost faith that the writing for his character and the portrayal by Jake Gyllenhaal will be pretty great.
So I don't know anything about Mysterio. Jeff, what are like Mysterio's powers or stuff?
No idea. I just know Jake Gyllenhaal could play any fucking villain and I'd be happy. Like, I wish he was like the Green Goblin or something, but I don't really care. I'm just glad he's going to be in an MCU movie because there's not many left.
I pulled up his powers.
What does he got?
He's able to throw a smoke bomb, and then when the smoke dissipates, he's Chris Angel.
Ah, nice.
That's fucking crazy.
Ringing the horn for the Las Vegas Knights. Golden Knights, sorry.
I almost said Dane Blaine, a combination David of Dane Blaine. Cook and David Blaine.
Oh, that'd be the worst human being alive.
Could you, Dane Blaine. Could you fucking imagine?
I love David Blaine. Do you not like David Blaine?
No, but could you imagine a Dane Cook David Blaine crossover?
Folks, that's my impression of that character.
Oh no, I can't imagine that. That sounds like a good segment for the future. Is like the most unlikely crossovers you'd never want to see.
Who's the puppet guy, Birbiglia?
Ooh, Birbiglia. No. Mike Birbiglia is a comedian.
No, Jeff Dunham.
Yeah,
what would be a good Jeff Dunham hybrid character? Jeff Dunham and like Lena Dunham. Combine those two, and he's the worst human being alive. Just Lena Dunham using puppets to say really problematic stuff on Twitter.
What was the one we talked about the other day?
A comedian?
Oh, wait. I'm not sure we can say it, because that means you were going to create a parody account.
No, we could say it. I'll hold on the parody account, I think. So this was a me and Trill Ballins co-production. We are going to make the brand. So is it going to be the three-person brand, or is it going to be the two-person brand? Because there's two different ways we can go with this.
No, you're going to do it because I have no energy to do anything anymore.
No, it was two. It was two people.
I just felt like it was our creation. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Were you thinking of making Haley Joel Osteen? So it was going to be a combination of Haley Joel Osment and Joel Osteen and make just like a Cat Williams Pharrell parody account out of him. I mean, we added some people on. We tacked on
Todd Haley.
So it was Todd Haley, Joel Osteen. And then we tacked on another person as well. I forget exactly who, but. We're going to work on that. That's a work in progress.
My first one was Haley Joel Edward Almost.
That was it. Yep.
Something like that. It wasn't as good. We had to workshop it. That's what we do when we play Fortnite. We just come up with name combinations.
And talk about CEOs, Jack Welch.
Nobody try to reserve those ads either. I've reserved them all, so don't even look
for
them.
Okay, yeah, don't try, folks. Last bit of news. We were going to talk about this whole Sonic casting thing, but we'll save that for the weekend. 1990s toys. We've talked about them being movies. Well, guess what? A Creepy Crawlers movie is coming. Trill, do you know what Creepy Crawlers are?
Yeah, they were those. I were they edible?
They made edible versions.
A mold.
Yeah.
You put gel into a mold and easy baked ovened it, and it turned into gelatinous creatures. Worms and whatnot. I just can't remember if they're edible or not.
There were edible versions. Yeah, the incredible
they
edibles.
They looked delicious.
They did always look delicious. Yeah, there were edible versions. Maybe they were all edible. But Kendrick didn't know what Creepy Crawlers were.
No clue.
That was before his time. They advertised heavily during the Fox Kids animation lineup around 1992 when the X-Men were going off. And they had that commercial that was Creepy Crawlers.
Yeah, they were terrifying commercials. Yeah,
the mad scientist. Yeah. Hey, let's talk about the movie. No chance this is good, guys.
Yeah, zero chance.
No. It's like, what the fuck do you make a movie on? Like, is it just going to be like, okay, is it going to be like the Call of Duty movie they're going to make, or it's just a war movie and they slap on Call of Duty? It's like, is this going to be a Bugs and Spiders movie? And they just
what is going to be?
Yeah, or is it going to be like baking spiders and like gel spiders?
Were you baking or creating? Because by all accounts, from what Jeff or what you did some research on this toy before, because I'd never heard of it before, it looks like you just basically play like a factory worker. That's the whole point of the game. Like they give you all the assembly and you just assemble your own thing.
I guess
you're not a scientist. You have a mold.
Yeah, like that's what they
were.
You're
molding the pieces.
Like, the character was the commercial like a Doc Brown character. That's basically what
evil
it
scientist.
What a fucking hack job commercial that is. What a ripoff. They're just giving
this
you
this is
some
what this movie's going to be. Sorry to talk over you, but this is what that movie's going to be, Ken Jack. The scientist inadvertently creates oversized creepy crawlers, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson must combat them.
So is this in the Shrinky Dink universe, or how do you inadvertently make a giant mold?
It uses the wrong gel, and it's tied into Rampage. It's that stuff that was in the asteroid, but and it just makes the creepy crawlers.
That was genetic editing. These things aren't alive, Trill. It's like you didn't even see Rampage.
That's funny that you know what Shrinky Dinks are, by the way, and you know what Creepy Crawlers are.
You ever play Light Bright, my friend?
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's not like weird. It's just it's funny to me that you knew what those are, but you don't.
That's one of my favorite tweets. Did you ever see that where like
Paul Thomas Anderson will direct Creepy Crawlers, by the way.
Yes, for sure.
Let me go down the list of 90s toys, though. Just say if you would see that movie or not. Because there's a lot of these that I'm surprised don't have movies. Super Soakers.
That's like Gun the movie. I don't get it.
Koosh balls.
I don't know what those are.
These are Koosh balls right here.
You don't know what a Koosh ball is?
All right, I do know what that is actually, but no, thank you.
Tamagotchis. I feel like I'm surprised it's not a movie already.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
It's basically Pokemon.
Yeah.
No.
Well, no, in terms of, like, that's how they'd have to do it would be Pokemon. It'd be like...
Oh, like in technically speaking. Okay, I thought you meant the game was like that.
Beanie Baby movie. Now, how about there should be a Beanie Baby movie where they're... It's like R-rated and they're depressed that they're depreciating in value despite what they've been promised that they'd be worth.
Or a Beanie Baby collector.
It's a movie that's chronicling the separation of two people and the division in court over the collection of their Beanie Babies. Or
Troll Dolls, we already have that one. Remember Gak?
I don't. Let me see.
Yeah.
Gak. Was it Nickelodeon Gak?
What the fuck is
Nickelodeon
that?
Nickelodeon Gak.
Yeah.
That stuff, by the way, picked up everything. You lay it on a desk and it would have everything that was on that desk just in it. Hair, remnants of like pencil lead, whatever.
Gak was the closest thing you could get to slime if you're a Nickelodeon
but
fan.
Slime wasn't that sticky, though. That just looks like calcified rubber.
Here's your favorite one, Ken Jack. Pogs.
I still, for the life of me, cannot wrap my head around Pogs. It just looks like you're playing with fucking coasters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's bizarre. Polly Pockets. Skip It. Remember Skip It?
Wait, let me see.
It's that ball you'd put around your ankle and you just jump and you just skip the ball.
I was just playing in fucking like Easy Coops. I don't think I ever played with any of these.
What about a?
I don't think I would see that one.
What about a Power Wheels movie?
Yes,
maybe like Fast and the Furious style Power Wheels.
Cross it into the Boss Baby universe,
or the Baby Geniuses universe.
It's just adults wearing diapers riding in Power Wheels or something like that. I don't know.
Was this after your time, Joe? Floam. It's like the little beads. It was like foam. You could like wrap things in it.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
That wasn't around.
Flum. Furbies. Has there ever been a Furby movie? That's very surprising.
Furbies creep the fuck
Furbies
out.
If Furbies came out during this time period, there'd be a movie within a month. Same with like Razor Scooters. I think that's it. I think I'm
Porgs are the new Furbies.
Porgs?
Yeah, from The Last Jedi.
I don't think anyone's like playing with Porgs really right now. Would you say? I don't think it has the same cultural impact as the Furby.
Some other ones. Tech Deck.
The problem with the Furby is they had that beak, and that was the unsettling part of the Furby. If you didn't have the beak on the Furby, it wouldn't be as creepy.
I agree.
Don't Wake Daddy. That you could get a really fucked up movie. Don't Wake Daddy. it could be kind of weird. Stretch Armstrong's going to get a movie, though. Stretch Armstrong's part of the Hasbro Cinematic Universe. What was the other one? I think that was it. Oh, Tech Dex. Tech Dex was fucking awesome.
That's interesting. All right, now we're cooking with gas once we hit the tech deck.
Yeah.
In this room. Are we in the early 2000s toys? Or?
Get James Corden's high five to be in the tech deck. Oh. He's like this free-floating hand riding a tech deck.
Oh, man. Okay, so, we like 90s nostalgia talk. That's been news, a little jam-packed news because there's a lot to talk about. We'll move Sonic to Sunday. We'll talk about Sonic because the casting news for Sonic is wild and also hard to understand because Ken Jack and I consistently thought that these people were going to be cast as Sonic the Hedgehog, but apparently not. We'll talk about that Sunday. Coming up on Lights, Camera, Barstool, Solo, A Star Wars Story, The Review. We'll have our details, our spoilers, all that and more when we come back on Lights, Camera, Barstool.
Hey guys, Steve Stevenson. I haven't advertised on Lights, Camera, Podcast in a while. I apologize for that. I don't have much money. I'm going to be honest with you. The business isn't doing too well. Can't get any of the movies you want to see, and everyone keeps coming in with this damn movie pass. I don't want to pay with real money. But that won't stop me from being successful at Steve Stevenson's Classic Cinema.
Yeah,
you remember that one? You guys like that old jingle? Well, it's back. All right, you walk in the door to Steve Stevenson's Classic Cinema, and you see a few new additions. You turn to the left, and the first thing you see, it's an Alexa machine. And this Alexa machine isn't just any ordinary Alexa machine. It's custom programmed to have quotes from the Joker from The Dark Knight. Here, try it out. Hey, Alexa.
I don't want to kill you.
Sorry.
What would I do?
Hey, Alexa.
You?
Hey, Alexa. Steve Stevenson's Classic Cinema. And now, at Steve Stevenson's Classic Cinema, you can use Steve Stevenson bucks to pay for the things you love. One movie equals one Steve Stevenson buck. 10 Steve Stevenson bucks equals 10 Steve Stevenson bucks.
25. 30.
Well, I haven't really figured that one out yet, but we got a lot of great things planned, so come on down to Steve Stevenson's Classic Cinema.
All right, we're back. Lights, Camera, Barstool, Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, Ken Jack, Solo, A Star Wars Story. We saw it. Terrell finally saw it yesterday, correct? Ken Jack, no, 2 days ago, right?
Yeah, this weekend.
Okay. Ken Jack, saw it again for the second time
last night
on Tuesday. You sat in the top balcony, right?
Yeah.
Oof.
Actually, it was kind of awesome because it wasn't that crowded and the bottom level was fucking packed out.
Yeah, when we saw it, me, Ken Jack, Robbie, we saw it. It was just half full, maybe.
If that.
Yeah, it was very surprising. Very surprising. Early thoughts. Or not early thoughts, because we're going to share all thoughts. But non-spoiler thoughts. We'll let you know when we get the spoilers. I gave it a 74. I liked it, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it, and as a Star Wars movie, I had a lot of fun. But I just thought it was a fucking mess. And I thought the first act was pretty unwatchable. Like, just not good. Just not a good first act. But for the most part, I was a fan. But as a movie, and I'll get into why I say this, I compared it to, like, Fast and the Furious 7. Not in the sense of, like, what it's involved with, but, like, how I felt leaving the theater. So that's my non-spoiler thoughts. Trill, what did you give it? And what did you think?
Jeff, close to you, I gave it a 75. I think this movie was exactly what we thought it would be, except for Alden Ehrenreich wasn't as bad as we thought he would be. Mm-hmm. It was somewhat delightful as a character. You compared it to Fast and the Furious. I'm going to compare this movie to a TED Talk. Solo, a Star Wars story, is like a TED Talk because you open it up, you watch it, you learn some things that you already knew, you learn some things that you didn't know, you close it up, and then you never want to see it ever again.
I hate you with my life in this moment for that terrible analogy.
Well, you rewatch Solo. I never want to rewatch Solo. That was like a one-time event for me. I'm done. I don't need to see that movie again, but as a standalone event, it was perfectly fine.
My name's Trill Bowens, and I don't understand how analogies work. Someone please take me seriously. That's my impersonation of you.
It may have been an imperfect analogy.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, score is... I originally scored it an 84 after my second viewing. I'm bumping it up. Bumping the score up. Going to an 85 after my second viewing. I think it was a ton of fun, and it basically hit every mark I think that any of us could have ever wanted. Because in reality, what you want out of this movie is that you want it to be a fun and engaging story, you want cool special effects, and you want it to hit that impossible level of margin for fan service where it's noticeable, but it's not too noticeable. And I think in this case, you also want the performances to do the original characters justice. And I think it did all those things and more for me. So I think that the biggest problem, like you mentioned, is that it struggled a little in the first act, and that it was a little too long, but I think it stayed cohesive, which is more than I can say for its older brother, Rogue One, which is a steaming pile of dog shit. What'd you rate Rogue One?
Rogue One's an 84.
Yeah,
for
get
me.
The fuck out of here with that. If you're going to put Solo as a 74, Solo as a 74, you cannot rank.
I know people like the movie. People don't agree with you.
People
know that,
wildly agree with me.
No,
people, everybody who has tweeted to me has agreed with me.
I've had no one
disagree with me on
most
that.
Most people like Rogue One.
You're just incorrect
because
every single person
okay,
has
we're
tweeted
gonna,
me
we're
going to
put
wrong.
It on a poll right now. I promise you most people like Rogue One more than they like Solo. I guarantee it.
You guys have to agree with me.
I think it's a good enough
movie.
I don't even think it's fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even think it's fatigue. I think it's due to the fact that, again, Rotten Tomatoes fucks everything up.
It's fucking...
And it came out way too early.
Yeah.
The fact that they let the fucking reviews drop 2 weeks before the movie, that's not going to be good for any movie. I don't care if it's Avengers or The Dark Knight. You can't have 2 weeks of discussions and speculation like that. That doesn't help anybody. Doesn't help anybody. All right. Listeners gave it an 80. 80 out of 100 from the listeners, which is basically what it was when it first came out. If you're rating our movies, by the way, it's 0 to 100 because we've noticed some people rating things all in the single digits. It doesn't stop at 10. They could be trolling. Not sure. But it doesn't stop at 10. So just a heads up if you're rating the movies. Okay. Spoilers. We'll put a time code here. Skip ahead if you don't want this movie spoiled.
To avoid spoilers for Solo, a Star Wars story, skip to 54:12.
All right. Spoilers. Solo, a Star Wars story. I guess, actually, we could have done this in non-spoilers, but whatever. Lando, Han, did you like both portrayals? Because they were both very different portrayals. Completely different how each other actor tackled it. Because Lando was an impression from Donald Glover completely. And he nailed it. I mean, it was there were some moments where I'm like, holy shit, that sounds exactly like Billy Dee Williams. But then Alden Ehrenreich did not do an impression of Han. He had some mannerisms of Han, but he did not do an impression. Trill, what did you think? Compare them both.
I liked them both. I liked the fact that Han didn't do, or Alden didn't do an impression of Han, because he's a younger Han who still needs to go through some stuff. And by the end of the movie, I think you do see that confidence grow a little bit. Lando was already established coming into this movie. So Lando was Lando. So I really liked the way both of them tackled the roles, Jeff, like you were saying, differently. And going back to the original point, all the buzz around this movie in development was that the acting for Han Solo was going to be a little rough. And I wonder if some of that was because he just didn't do a Han Solo, a Harrison Ford Han Solo impersonation. But I don't think he had to do that in this movie. I thought he was really good. It's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, he was totally serviceable as Han, which especially, at least for me going into it, I was like, there's no way he's going to be able to do Han justice. Like, so I'm not going to have that expectation. But still, I think he did that. And he didn't try to make the role into, like you said, an impersonation, which is a great observation. He somewhat made it his own. He made him not so sure of himself as he is in the rest of the franchise. He's not, still a little cocksure, but he's a little bit, like, I don't know the right phrase. I would say he's just, like, not entirely sure of what's going to happen. And you see, I think a great part about this movie is that you see him learn a lot throughout the film. Like, he doesn't know some things, and he, like, catches on from things, especially from Tobias throughout the movie. For example, like the final plot twist where he knows all of Tobias's plan. That's a great learning moment that you don't get in movies like Rogue One, where there's no character development, which is, I think, is a great effect from Larry Kasdan and the crew, just like knowing how to write characters and make you attached to them and see them grow, which is what I really liked about it.
See, I like both of them. I don't have to harp much more on that. But I thought the beginning, I thought the end of the movie were just both weak. I just thought there wasn't like a moment at the end of Solo. Like, even if you didn't like the character development, and even if you didn't like most of Rogue One, the ending is, I thought, fairly decent. The emotion of everyone dying, which, by the way...
What emotion?
We'll get to that in a... I mean, they're still emotional. She's still dying.
She's watching soldiers die.
She's still dying. I mean, no, Jin is still dying.
Wait, so let's go through the characters' names again in Rogue One.
Jin.
End of list.
Cassian.
Okay, moving on.
Cassian. I mean, I remember them. We're not good examples for that. Anyway,
nobody is, because
the
they
fact
didn't
of the matter
anybody.
Is there's
you
still
didn't
a moment.
A
there's no moment at the end of Solo like the Darth Vader thing, and nothing like the Leia thing.
That's very true.
But that's my thing. It felt like it went out on a whimper. Like, I love the Darth Maul part, which we'll get to again. Well, and actually, we also have to talk about the fact that these Star Wars story movies, they have to figure out the fact that they have to kill all their fucking characters. That, like, almost everyone who's not relevant to a sequel or to the main Star Wars universe died in this movie. And if they do something like this again, they're going to mostly have to die because they're not in all the other movies. Well, again, we'll get to that in a second. But there wasn't anything that felt like, oh, fuck yeah, like that ended like powerfully. That was a great ending. I didn't feel
it. What would have made that for you? What type of scene? Because, like, with Rogue
One,
they have
that freedom.
This was
supposed to be a Western. That was how it was pitched all along. It was Larry Kasdan, his son, they're doing a Western-type Star Wars movie, and there wasn't, like, a shootout or anything.
Every Western ends with you riding off into the sunset. Is that not exactly
what they
did?
Yeah, but no, there was not a big ending for this movie, though. I didn't think there was.
What?
There was the battle with what's-his-face?
Dryden Voss.
There was, like an okay battle in his, like, lair, and then there was the cool Darth Maul scene. She shot Beckett, obviously, but then, like, there wasn't, like, a big ending to the movie like I hoped there had been. Like, almost all Star Wars movies have that big ending.
Wanted, like, a shootout? Like, it was, like...
Like, I wanted, like, a Western shootout or something that was, like, gritty and, like, I just didn't... Like, I thought there was going to be a shootout with Enfys Nest, like, in that character. But there just wasn't. I don't know. It didn't hammer home. If it had hammered home its ending, I may have liked it more than Rogue One.
I thought it was a totally Western ending. In fact, like, they just rode off into the sunset, it was more about the plot than it was about just big explosions and gunfights. It was more about, like, watching, again, like I mentioned before, Han grow into knowing, like, you can't trust anybody if you're an outlaw. If you're a criminal, you need to, like, understand that, like, there's these different actors going throughout everything, and, like, you need to know what's happening around your, in, like, your surroundings, and, like, he gets all that, and instead of it being this big fucking gory shootout, it's just, like, him, like, outmaneuvering everybody, which I think is better as a Western than, like, it just being okay, battle at the OK Corral.
I'm in the middle of you guys. I thought the ending was fine. I did feel like they added the Darth Maul thing in there just to have something for people to remember the movie by.
Apparently Ron Howard, by the way, was very adamant about that.
I liked it. I liked seeing
Darth
Maul.
Oh, I liked
Darth
it too.
I didn't like the lightsaber part. More. The lightsaber part was so stupid. Like, just so you know, he has a lightsaber.
That is, I mean, I liked it as a fan, but, like, it was completely forced in. Because it's like, why did he need to show the fucking lights? I mean, we know why they needed to show it, because they need to be like, oh, there it is. It's like the Red Letter Media
still
thing.
Still got it, folks.
Yeah, it's like the Red Letter Media thing when they pretend to be fans watching the Star Wars trailer. Like, oh, Lucasfilm logo. Got to clap for that. Got to clap for that. Like, that's exactly what it reminded me of.
Exactly. It's like, it's so unnecessary. It's like, oh, yeah, he's a Sith. He's got the saber, guys. Look, there it is. It's all red and everything. So unnecessary. But what did you guys think of the Darth Maul cameo in general?
I love the Darth Maul cameo in general. It added something very interesting to the movie that I don't know if this will get a sequel, but if it was a sequel involving Darth Maul or a spinoff involving Darth Maul, then I'm very much interested in that.
So people who don't know, by the way, he was in Clone Wars. He had spider legs. And then he got robot legs, which is what he has in this one. And then he gets real legs. And Obi-Wan kills... Sorry, that's spoiler. Well, it's spoilers. Whatever. Obi-Wan kills him in Rebels. It's a cool storyline. But, like, if you didn't know Darth Maul was still alive, like, that must... I heard some people leaving the theater, like, that's not really Maul. It's like, it is. But, like, I'm not... Like, I can't blame you for not knowing.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool, though. I just, again, my big thing was I thought the beginning, much like Rogue One, was a mess. Which maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe Star Wars movies that have to be redone are just a mess in the beginning. And then I just thought the ending was, while enjoyable, I just didn't... It didn't hit home, the whole thing. By the way, the poll, 300 votes, 68% say Rogue One.
I can show you the Reddit thread bridge. It says actual long-form explanations that you're incorrect. But let's move on. So anyway...
Hey, wait, hold on. There is no incorrect here. We can all have different opinions.
What did you guys... I think if I had a choice in the beginning, instead of it starting with him on Corelli as a street rat, I would have liked it to start with... And this is like a dumb fan bullshit, but I would have liked for it to start with him being like as a pilot in the Imperial Army already, and him like being what he is, which is like the rebel, and like not like having a mind of his own, like he said, which was at the 25-minute mark by the time he was already up fighting on that planet. So like if it started there and like you see him learning how to fly, which would be awesome, I think. I think it'd be a much easier and smoother beginning.
It's just a lot of storylines they had to do. Like, I don't know how they would have done it, because you had to establish with Emilia Clarke's character.
Yeah.
And then you had to establish with Woody Harrelson in the gang. And it just felt very disjointed. Just very, like, it was messy, I thought, in the beginning. And it was in the middle when Lando kind of comes in the picture is when it sort of picks up. There's some characters I don't like. I don't like that robot L3. I
liked L3.
I did not like that robot.
L3 was like the robot version of the gag from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The peasant that's like a socialist. Do you remember that part?
The funniest part of L3 is when she was cutting the fence or whatever, and she didn't want people to look at her.
Yeah,
I thought that was a solid gag. That won me over on the character. No major complaints there.
You didn't like the robot revolution where they all start like breaking everything and just like destroying the whole fucking control.
It felt like a forced story. I just felt like a forced storyline.
Nice
like
pun.
No, there's no force in this movie. Well, I guess there is because it's fucking Darth Maul. Which, by the way, I do love that people are like, oh, this is going to be the first Star Wars movie with no Jedi or lightsaber. Isn't that motherfucker pulls out a lightsaber right at the end of the movie?
Right at the end.
Which I will say, the one deep cut reference of L3 I did like is 3PO notes how smart the Millennium Falcon is. And I think Empire, and you learn why. It's because L3 is implanted in the Millennium Falcon. There's a lot of really, really cool deep cut references here, and they did a much better job than Rogue One, because, I mean, Gareth Edwards, he forced in some references. Like, I always reference it. Our buddy James, Mr. Sunday Movies in the Weekly Planet, always says when 3PO and R2 show up, they're like, hey, it's a Star Wars movie. Like, they just are, like, basically waving at the crowd. So, I mean, again, all that stuff was, for the most part, it was good.
The first half, I'm with you, it was slow. Didn't like it as much as the Acts 2 and 3. Two of the jokes I hated the most in the movie, maybe they're not even jokes. One's a reference. So when Han is going through, I don't even know what to describe it, identification, and he doesn't have a last name, and they provide an explanation.
I was going to get to this, so yeah, I'm glad we got here.
They say, oh, Solo, Han Solo. Like, I didn't... not that's one of the problems with Star Wars. It just doesn't seem to get away from it, is literally everything being explained, from the midichlorians and the prequels to how Han got to be known as Han Solo. The other thing I also didn't like was when Han was speaking in Chewie's language.
Yep. Why not?
I just felt like, because he doesn't do it in any of the other movies.
But he doesn't. Doesn't he establish that he understands? Isn't it more like a trust building exercise? No.
Yeah. I get that it's a rapport building in order to win over Chewbacca, but it was very awkward.
Okay, but I think it still goes along the line of not everything needs to be explained. It goes back to the George Lucas issue with Phantom Menace, yeah. Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith, which was, I mean, far more egregiously done. Like, they explained everything in those movies. It's like, just let some of it go. Like, it doesn't all need to be explained that way. And the Wookiee thing, like, I can let go. It was the last name thing really pissed me off. I just, like, I don't need, like, that ruins Han a little bit for me. It doesn't ruin, like, Harrison Ford's performance, but you're just like, I didn't need to know that's why that was his last name. Like, I did not need to know that.
The funniest thing is that that is what sold Disney on this movie. Somebody had reported it that when they went to Disney like three or whatever years ago and said, we want to make this, they basically described that scene shot for shot, and Disney, like, wrote them the check that day to start production, which kind of stinks because it was one of the weaker scenes in the movie. But I guess they...
If they're going to film a Star Wars Story Alderaan, and it's going to be like, look, that guy just ejected from his X-Wing. We should call him Bail.
Yep.
Bail Organa.
Oh.
it was very frustrating.
It's like that. I mean, I don't know.
But Star Wars is corny, and I don't think that was something that took away where I'm like, oh, fuck this type of deal with the movie.
It was just
all
a major eye roll. I was just,
it's a Star Wars
movie. What'd you guys think of Tobias Beckett, by the way?
Woody Harrelson? He was fine. Yeah.
I thought he was very good as like a Han mentor.
He said the same exact thing that what's his face? DJ from Last Jedi said. He said, see you around or something. He goes, maybe. Or he says something, or like, you'll pay for this or something. He says the same exact line from The Last Jedi.
What'd you think of Paul Bettany?
I don't think there was a character I disliked. I liked them all. The issues I had with this movie were the pacing and some of the set pieces in the first act.
I think the Enfys-Nest B plot was unnecessary. Like, making him part of the rebellion this sort of early on, I don't think was totally.
Yeah, I mean,
needed.
He basically starts the rebellion.
Yeah,
in kind of a sense of that. I mean, that's sort of what happens.
I don't think that was necessary, but a lot of the things in this I did like was the nostalgia for callbacks, like the fan service. I never thought was too heavy-handed, which is such a very easy threat for a Star Wars anthology movie. I think the recruitment center when he goes to sign up playing the Imperial March is awesome. I think that the Dryden's yacht with like the singer and like the tube is so perfectly Star Wars. I thought, do you remember, you know, the scene I'm talking about with like the singing blob? That is so perfectly like Jabba's yacht, that Enfys-Nest or rather Dryden Vos's yacht. I think also the Tobias wearing Lando's mask from Return of the Jedi is a great callback. And I'm trying to think of one more.
This is just a question for you. Did you factor that into you rating the movie? Stuff like that?
I would factor in the fact that they didn't go too heavy with fan service.
That's fair.
It didn't impact
it
positively.
I know that sounds weird, but it's like, I think it's more fair to factor it in for them not do. Like that's the thing. Like, I loved all those, but like, that doesn't make the movie better for me.
No.
And that's why I compared it to, like, there's little things in Fast 7. Like, the fucking end scene with Paul Walker's character, it's one of the better end scenes of, like, an emotional end scene for a movie. But, like, I'm not going to factor that into the score being better. I guess that's, like, one of the few things where I drew similarities leaving. Like, I loved, like, the Lando guard thing. But I'm like, I'm not going to say, oh, the movie's great because of that. Because I know, you know, grading it on a scale of other movies, that's why.
No, I'm saying, like, it didn't add points to the score for me, but it didn't take away points, which it would have done if it was too much.
Yes.
With the fan service.
Which has happened in movies.
When Tobias got on the ventral cannon for the Millennium Falcon and they played like Luke's music from when he first got on it from New Hope, I was like, I had fucking chills. I was ready to go. I was revved.
Well, they also played Dual Fates.
Yes.
When Darth Maul came out, which is pretty fucking cool. I did like that a lot. The music was actually really good in this movie.
Yeah.
Which
it was John Williams, right?
He only did the Han theme.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. So anything else on this movie before we wrap this up and read some listener movie ideas? I mean, again, we all liked it. We don't differ that much. This is not like Happy Death Day.
No.
Yeah.
I think we differ on the Rogue One thing, and we differ on just with the scores, but I still enjoyed it. I liked it more than I thought I would. And I think that's satisfying enough for me. I'm going to see it again.
I think you'll like it more in the second viewing, I think.
I leave this movie just supremely interested, wanting to know how much of the Lord and Miller cut was done and what that would look like.
They say it's grittier. They say it's a grittier movie.
They have Michael K. Williams playing a Khajiit from fucking Elder Scrolls. You never played that, though, did you, Trill? I don't know.
No, I did not.
They had Michael K. Williams from The Wire playing, like Omar from The Wire playing a Catman, if that gives you anything.
Oh, it would be interesting to be able to compare these movies, even if it is like a trailer in the special cut, special edition Blu-ray.
Michael K. Williams just playing Mr. Mistopheles from Cats the Musical.
We were just talking about that before. Did you guys think...
Magical Mr. Mistopheles.
Did you guys think that, and this is a worry for me going into for a movie that's solely about Han and, no pun intended, a movie about Solo and Chewie, is that I thought it was going to be too Lassie-ish the way they do dialogue, because you don't understand Chewbacca. Obviously, I don't think it was like that at all.
No, they just went into regular, like, how they talk.
Yeah, but he was never like, Chewbacca never made a noise, and he was like, what's that, Chewie? You want to turn the regulator on? Like, he was never anything like that. I think, like, they left enough of it to imagination.
So, that's Rogue One. That's Solo. Here's my final plea, by the way. Fucking stop making Star Wars movies about these same characters. You gotta move on from that shit. It's too connected. It's fine. The Boba Fett one will be okay, I guess. But, like, let's move on. Like, let's find other characters. There's a zillion storylines they can talk about. You can weave in one character here and there. But, like, let's expand the universe a little bit here. No pun intended for the expanded universe, which they killed off. That's my only plea. Like, let's do something different.
That's what I liked about Rogue One, and that's why I didn't care about the character development, because it was more about the world and the scene around it rather than the characters. I enjoyed that. And that's the thing, is that going back to my TED talk, it's like they explain some stuff you knew, like how Han Solo got to be where he is. They explain some stuff you didn't know, how his name is Han Solo. But at the end of the day, like, we already know plenty of about Han Solo, whether or not this movie was made. It didn't add anything to the Star Wars universe for me as a nerd fan. That's fine. This movie is worth seeing, though. If you haven't seen it, go see it in theaters. It's a fun theater experience. I think you'll really like it. Whether or not you're going to go back within 5 days and see it again like Kenjack depends on how crazy you are.
Well, the worst thing is like, I'm not, like, I'm a Star Wars critic. Like, I'm not like a person that's like, oh, everything Star Wars touches is gold. Like, you need to see it. I think this was objectively a good movie and a fun time to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you're a Star Wars fan or, like, just like a regular non-Star Wars fan.
I mean, there's very differing opinions here, especially on the Rogue One and Solo thing. I'll read some tweets. So, Rogue One, it's 500 votes, 67% Rogue One. And I know you said Reddit. I mean, I do think Reddit's a smaller... People flesh out their opinions a lot more on our Reddit, which, by the way, go to our Reddit. We like when you go there. But, like, there's a lot of varying opinions in the replies. It's, you know, real valedictorian of summer school situation. Someone said, I can recognize Rogue One as a better movie, but I enjoyed Solo a ton more, which somebody said that again, like, two tweets below.
Like, Solo's a better movie? Or?
Yeah, like, Rogue One's a better movie, but Solo's a much more fun watch. I can agree with that. Rogue One's incredibly fucking depressing. It's like, I mean, people just die left and right at the end of the movie. So, I mean, again, that's all fair. Like, I can go either way with that. But it's, you know, look, it's enjoyable and I hope it makes more money because it's a fun movie. And it's still only one this year. It's one Star Wars movie this year. But it didn't help that also another Star Wars movie came out like 5 months ago. The promotion for this film lasted like 4 months. That's not good.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what way you look at it.
We even helped out on it.
Yeah. Like,
for free.
It's ridiculous. Like, that was a stupid fucking decision to put this movie out in May. And Disney's not misstepped on many things, like whether you like Last Jedi or not. They promoted the shit out of that really well. And with Marvel, they blew it on this one. Huge. They only have themselves to blame.
And you're right after Avengers Infinity War, and then if you're in the same ilk or mindset that we are, you're going to see Deadpool 2, and then by the time you get to Solo, you just feel tired almost.
Yeah, no, I totally
get that. Some people might say.
I totally get that. I just think everyone, even whether you're a Star Wars fan or not, used to watch it. I think it was a fun heist film. And I think it was a good take on a space western.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We nitpick a lot of things, but it's more fun to nitpick a 75 movie than to talk about how great it is.
I'm okay with us nitpicking something like this. It's when we start nitpicking the 95 to 100. Maybe we should be a little more fair.
Well, there's stuff that could have been improved. And how much of that was how far they were gone in filming and what Ron Howard was able to come on and salvage. We'll never know.
It's true.
Yeah, we will never know. Okay, I gave it a 74. Trollbones gave it a 75. Ken Jack an 85. And our listeners an 80. When we come back on Lights, Camera, Barstool, we're going to take your movie pitches and we're going to roast them or just say we like them, talk about them, and rate them. We'll be right back on Lights, Camera, Barstool.
I forgot to mention when we originally recorded this podcast that we are going to continue counting down our favorite skits and commercials from past episodes with this next one, Conquest the Slander Dog on the Goskers, our award show, red carpet.
The following skit is in no way related to the trademarked and copyright property that is Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Welcome to the red carpet. It's me, Conquest the Slander Dog. Here, as all of the celebrities arrive before they win the Who Gives a Shit Awards of 2018. But wait, actually, I thought we were at the Golden Globes. We're actually at the Goskers. Let's talk to some celebrities. Here is Steven Spielberg, director of The Post. It's quite the honor, Steven. I was a very big fan of The Post. And you know, I was thinking, the movie studios and the theater companies have to be very happy that your movie catered to their key core demographic of people over the age of 85. I kid. I really liked The Post, but I did have a hard time hearing it over the sound of all of the old people unwrapping their hard candies. That's okay, though. I will say the nicest part of the movie, and it was on your behalf, too, is that you added in an intermission in the middle of the movie where you came on screen and reminded everyone in the audience to take their back medication. Oh, hey there, Kermit the Frog. How are you doing? I have not seen you in a very long time.
Oh, hello there, Conquest. Haven't seen you in a while. I thought you were Triumph for a second. Just here on the carpet with me and Piggy and Gonzo and Fozzie Bear.
Oh, yes, that is great. Did you know, Kermit, I realized you and I have one thing in common.
Oh, what exactly is that, Conquest?
In order for us to speak, a man has to stick his hand up our bussies.
Oh.
Here now with the director of Get Out, Jordan Peele. Jordan, congratulations on quite the phenomenon in Get Out. Yes, yes, Get Out, a thriller horror movie about the sunken place. Get Out is actually also what all movie studios are currently saying to Kevin Spacey. Oh, look over there. Look who it is. It's Optimus Prime. Optimus, come over here. I have a question for you. Optimus, he's ignoring me. Fuck you. Hey, Optimus, you suck. Fuck you, Optimus. Optimus Prime, Transformers was a good movie for me to poop on. Oh, I cannot say that. It's trademarked. Okay. It's a tremendous movie for me to defecate on.
All right, we're back. Lights, Camera, Barstool. New segment. We'll see how this goes. This could be like the Court of Trill. You never really know what you think until it's over with. If people like it, we'll do more of these. We asked you to send in your movie pitches. Director, actress, actor, supporting role. Only one, some people did two, and then the description of the movie. So we'll say if we like it or don't like it. Maybe add some comments onto it and then rate it 0 to 100 like we do with all our movies. Movie number one, director Taika Waititi, actress Emma Stone, actor Michael Fassbender, supporting actors H. John Benjamin and Jessica Walters, shout out Arrested Development. It's a gritty 50s noir about Detective Pikachu and seedy underbelly of Saffron City. Are you going to green light this movie or not into it?
Trilla, what do you think?
It sounds like Michael Fassbender is playing Pikachu based on the way this is set up.
I don't know. Taika Waititi and gritty? No, was that gritty?
It wasn't gritty, but it was grittier than like Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to green light this. This sounds interesting. It sounds a lot more structured and fleshed out than the Ryan Reynolds Detective Pikachu movie, which we need more details on. I like the cast. A gritty Detective Pikachu movie. I think that's exactly what the film industry needs right now.
I'll greenlight anything with Taika Waititi. I want him to make more money because he's beautiful and an amazing director.
Yeah,
And Fassbender needs a hit.
Yeah, he does.
Needs a hit, and this could be it.
He does. I'll greenlight it. I'm going to give this it's between 70 and 75. It's not amazing. Whoa. But it's serviceable. I'm not sure Michael Fassbender should be Pikachu, but, you know.
People would see it just for the spectacle alone.
Yeah. Okay. So we all greenlit that one. Movie number one. Movie number two. We're one for one. Good job. Movie number two. This apparently is going to be a Lonely Island movie. So you guys might like this one. Director is Akiva from The Lonely Island. Actress Ellie Kemper. Actor Andy Samberg. And supporting actor is Jorma from Lonely Island. Here's the description, though. This is where they may lose you. Friday Night Lights, but instead of a football team, the movie follows an electrician. I don't even know what that fucking means.
And he's just repairing the lights on football fields throughout, like, the West Texas area, something like that.
Okay, I guess I can see that. Yeah, so that you don't focus on the team, like, the team is the bit in the background. But this guy, he's just repairing the really tall lights on massive Texas stadiums.
So it's like a almost, would it be a documentary type deal?
I would probably view it as like
guy's life.
Like a hot rod but an electrician. I don't know really what the...
I'm trying to think where you go with that. So you have Andy Samberg as the electrician, right? And, you know, your introduction to the movie is him being responsible for all the lights around Permian or whatever area in Texas, Jeff, that football is very important to. And then the second act would be, you know, maybe his light malfunctioned and like canceled a really anticipated football game. And everybody's mad and out to get him, and then it becomes like a chase movie of some sort.
You made it a lot better than the original did.
Yeah,
I'll
I'm not
greenlight yours.
I'm not greenlighting this one. We're not. Trill's not the guy. Trill has to greenlight or can. I'm trashing this movie. It's gone.
I'm not going to greenlight the original. I like where it's going. I think you can expand on it. I just don't know if there's much depth there about him being an electrician and Friday Night Lights. I think you could probably make that funny. I mean, the whole joke is the Friday Night Lights and then the guy who actually repairs and fixes and maintains the Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
That's a 2-minute bit.
I think
SNL short.
This is like 60 to 65 for me because I think it's really funny, the concept, but there's nothing else. Like the entire score for me is just because it's funny. Movie number three. We're one for two here. Director Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Actress Zooey Deschanel. Actor Chris Pratt. Supporting John C. Reilly. Some of these are like really fleshed out. Animated movie about a community of germs Animated movie about a community of germs who grew up taught to believe in a religion based around the 5-second rule of when food hits the ground. They are told if they touch food within 5 seconds of it touching the ground, terrible things will happen. Until one day, a brave young germ dares to break the rules and watches as their society falls into anarchy as everything they lived by was a lie.
Green light.
That's an easy one.
Osmosis Jones 3.
Yeah, that's a movie that gets played in health class for years.
Yeah, that's Osmosis Jones and or the anthology story of that Mucinex character.
Already it's more charming than the Emoji Movie.
It's true.
A movie that actually got made.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to greenlight the hell out of that. Actually, hang on. Let me check something for you, Trill. Right now, Imagine Dragons is playing at the Caps Golden Knights Game 2 Stanley Cup. Okay, I thought they were going to be playing Friction. They're not. So that's a major fail.
Are they playing Thunder? They got to be playing Thunder.
Well, no, I think they're doing a Melody, but it wasn't Friction, so that's a loss. Are they
from Vegas, Imagine Dragons? They have a Vegas band.
Imagine Dragons. I don't know where they are from. That sounds right, but just because... Oh, yeah, they are. They're from Las Vegas. There you go.
Yep. Yeah, them and the Killers.
They grew up with Chum Lee from Pawn Stars. Movie number four. Director Jody Hill. Actress Kristen Wiig. Kristen Wiig, actor Danny McBride, supporting actor Finn Wolfhard. By the way, I'm giving that last one a 90 out of 100. 3 for 3. Here is the idea. The world's biggest miniature golfer, a disgraced professional golfer, enters a giant putt-putt tournament meant for children to show everyone that he still got it. So when they say world's biggest, do you think they mean he's like the
physically
Tiger
large.
Woods? Or he's like, is he just very big? Like I was thinking along the lines, he's like Andre the Giant.
Now, I think it'd be funnier if he was used to be like the number one ranked PGA player for 15 years straight. And he's trying to prove himself on the mini golf course. I just don't see where you go with it.
So it's like fucking Eastbound and Down or something? Or
yeah.
Yeah, it'd be kind of like that. I mean, Danny McBride's in it, right? Or was he in the last one? Was he in the Germ movie?
No, he's in this one. Yeah.
He's in this
one. So I guess
one.
That's what he's going after. when whoever wrote this.
Oh, yeah, this actually is exactly like that then. I like that, though. He's got to be a huge dick. I like the show, though. He's got to be just an asshole to the kids, like throwing kids clubs and stuff.
No, not Green and Lighting. I've seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I already watched Eastbound and Down. I don't need to see this.
I'm going to green light it. Let's see where it goes with this one.
It's like X, this is like the worst version of X Factor.
This is a February movie. I'm going to green light this as long as it comes out before March.
Fair enough.
This is filler. Like I expect this to, like, I'll give this to Blumhouse. They'll somehow make movie off like money off it, but it's going to be a piece of shit. Next up, movie 5. This is a very in-depth description. Director Adam McKay, actress Amy Adams, actor Chris Hemsworth, supporting actor Alan Tudyk. Carl Howard, played by Chris Hemsworth, a B-list pornographic actor with the stage name John Hammer, wants to be taken seriously and decides to try to make the jump to legitimate acting. After going back to his real name and completely changing his appearance, by chance he meets Simon Pepler, played by Tudyk, a very religious and successful producer. After impressing him, Hampton casts Howard for the newest season of his wholesome dramedy on a major network starring Kate Wilson, played by Amy Adams. This sounds like it gets very serious. Like a real feel-good pick-me-up story.
It's like Barry, right? Where he's got to conceal his identity.
Yeah, I guess that's the idea, right?
Pursue something he loves.
So, like, the religious guy obviously can't find out that he was a porno actor, right? So, like, I don't know. I like the idea. All right, I'm green-lighting.
I like the John Hammer name. That's good.
Yeah, I'm green-lighting based off
of John
Hammer.
Well, John Hammer.
Adam McKay's directing.
Yeah, that's true. That's a big factor. Adam McKay would not pick up a garbage product, so... Yeah, that's a green light. That's a really good idea. That's another 90. Very well fleshed out. I like that. All right, we've got a couple more here. We got some time. Paul Thomas Anderson. By the way, we're 4 for 5. Kind of four for five. There is one that Kenjack didn't like, which really wasn't that great. So I don't totally disagree. Movie 6. Paul Thomas Anderson, Daisy Ridley, Michael B. Jordan, Phil Swift. That's a wild combo. When every boat in America... Oh, wait. Okay, this is my favorite one. Hold on. We got to get ready for this one. I love this. When every boat in America is mysteriously sawed in half, President Michael B. Jordan, played by himself, recruits Danny DeVito, Daisy Ridley doing a Danny DeVito impression, to find out the cause. Her investigation leads her to a completely waterproof fortress at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, cameo by Jim Cameron as the guard. That houses Phil Swift, keeper of the Flex Seal. DeVito is captured while there. Will she make it out before slowly dipped into a vat of Flex Seal liquid? So when I first read this, I'm like, why would they cut the boats in half? And then I read the Flex Seal line and laughed very hard. This is a easy green light for me. This is hilarious. I love this.
Good product placement. Our studio is going to make money off of this one. Green light.
Yeah, automatic green light.
Kicks off the infomercial
the
cinematic
Danny DeVito
universe.
Casting is kind of weird, though.
Yeah, but Paul Thomas Anderson's a bit odd. This is an odd Paul Thomas Anderson movie, but man, Flex Seal, that's a great pitch. Big fan of that one. That's a green light. That might be 100. That's a 95 out of 100. The Danny DeVito thing's a little off, but everything else is flawless. Movie number 7. We're 5 for 6 now. Tim Burton, Aubrey Plaza, Johnny Depp, obviously, and Nicholas Holt. Dark Side of the Rainbow, a fucked up Wizard of Oz remake. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon is the soundtrack. He said, I know this is some meta bullshit. Depp is the Wicked Witch, an homage to Tim Curry and RHPS. Plaza is Dorothy and Holt is the Scarecrow. You'll have to cast the rest for me. I think a nice ending would be a plot twist like the movie High Tension, where Dorothy has been on a murdering spree in Kansas the whole time. That is very dark. I think you got to be a Pink Floyd fan to give a shit about this one.
Yeah, not greenlighting.
Yeah, I'm not greenlighting this. Some concepts were good, but I think there's limited commercial appeal for our studio to take this
Johnny
one on.
Johnny Depp,
also
Nick Poulter.
Yeah,
the
Tim
fuck?
Burton Johnny Depp thing pass.
Yeah, and adding fucking Poulter into that and looking like Sid from Toy Story.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Big
Sorry.
Pass.
Sorry. Movie number 8. Russo Brothers, Jennifer Lawrence, Rami Malek, Miles Teller. This is the Batman movie. In order to get revenge on Batman, played by Rami Malek, I'm not greenlighting this. Harley Quinn, played by Jennifer Lawrence, reveals the alter ego of a Justice League. The Green Arrow. The Green Arrow being played by Miles Teller. Batman / Bruce Wayne tries to publicly seduce Harley Quinn for doxing a member of his group. It seems just not fun.
Just no, like I'm passing.
Yeah, just not fun.
5'5" Rami Malek is Batman. Perfect.
Like a really like skinny suit, like not like even like a intimidating suit.
Yeah, huge pass. He'd be a good sidekick though. Imagine his Mr. Robot Elliot as like a tech geek sidekick to Batman.
Yeah, I'm just not into that one. All right, two more.
Do the highlighted ones that not the one we used.
Oh shit! I put them in a Word doc. We'll use them again. We're gonna do it. I like this. We'll do this again. Director Jonathan Lipnicki, actress Carmen Electra.
Wait, director Jonathan Lipnicki?
Actor Jonathan Lipnicki, supporting actor Michael J. Fox. Do you know what this movie is?
No.
What is a Jonathan Lipnicki and Michael J. Fox movie?
Jonathan Lipnicki and
Michael
J. Fox.
We talk about
this
series
together?
Whenever we do the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Oh, Stuart Little.
Yeah. We finally get to find out what the fuck the mouse is really up to. And he just gave us the ending. Stuart Little, LLC, is investigated by the SEC and the FTC for trade fraud and defrauding investors, one of which his brother, George Little. Stuart is then arrested and sent to a white-collar prison, and George's life is ruined. He never got the ride in the mouse's car.
That's still my favorite thing. I think that we tweeted that fucking Lipnicki responded to us.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, he's like ripped now. Lipnicki's yoked out. Yeah.
That was so funny. And then
I
want to
green light this one.
Did you see that troll?
I like
when,
this twist on Stuart Little.
Did you see that tweet troll when like we tweeted about Jonathan Lipnicki and then like somebody tweeted to Jonathan Lipnicki and he responded to the listener and then the listener just responded to him with like, "Did you ever get to drive in the car?"
That's right. Oh man,
oh, that's so fucking funny.
All right, last one. This one is very in-depth.
Wait, who maintained the Stuart Little car?
Ooh, what make was it?
Like look. An MG?
Oh, wait, are we greenlighting like that one?
What's the Kelley Blue Book value on the Stuart Little car?
I don't know. I don't like the Jonathan Lipnicki director. I don't know if he's proven himself as a director, but on the concept, we can switch him out midway through if it's not working out.
Stuart Little car.
We can make this a sponsorship, by the way.
I like
changes car brand.
I like the idea. I like the idea that someone's entire life goal would be to ride in Stuart Little, his little mouse car, and for that goal to be thwarted.
It was like a roadster.
What brand would you want it to be? Would you want it to be like a Subaru?
That's a Mazda Miata.
fuck you in the fucking Mazda Miata. Make it a Jeep, matte black tiny Jeep Rubicon.
This is the last one. This one is very intense. Very intense. Director Christopher Nolan, actress Jennifer Lawrence, actor Christian Bale. I have not read through this whole thing, so we're going to see if this even makes it through the podcast. The title of the movie is Inception 2, Incel-eption.
Yes.
Christian Bale plays Xander Cohn, a 40-year-old man who identifies as an incel that lives in his parents' basement and makes money as a pizza delivery man and hopes that one day his fantasy of delivering a pizza to a pretty woman will be fulfilled. One day he delivers a pizza to an extravagant mansion and Jessica Smith, played by Jennifer Lawrence, enters the door. Initially striking up a pleasant conversation with Jessica, Xander is rudely interrupted by Brad, played by Billy Magnussen, the heir to the technology that is used for incepting people. Brad and Jessica then slam the door on Xander and proceed to hook up right next to the door. Xander believes that Brad did this intentionally so he could hear them. On his way out, On his way out, Xander gets in his car and tries to find a way to win over Jessica and kill Brad. Xander is also determined to do this via the incepting technology that Brad lives off of. Let's see here. He has a wet dream at one point.
Oh, no.
this is bad. Xander gets flustered and makes a break for the door. Hans Zimmer's time is blaring, but before Xander is able to escape, he is apprehended by, Leonardo DiCaprio cameo, by Cobb, leading him to believe that this is still a dream. Xander's totem was burned by Brad, so he is unable to tell reality from dream. The movie ends by Xander going insane in his parents' basement. That's really messed up. So it doesn't end like Inception, where it doesn't really matter for Cobb, even though like the wedding ring thing is apparently what it was. So this is just negative.
That I don't like it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, Green Light City. I first of all, love how in-depth you went. Somebody went more in-depth, and I apologize for not reading it, but it was just way too much. We'll figure out a way to do something with that one. But, yeah, this was good. Green light. This was fun. I had a good time reading this. Listeners, let us know if you like this or not. There's some really funny submissions.
As a dad, yeah. I want to watch more wholesome, family-oriented films. So I'm worried that I'm going to pass.
Yeah, it's just not going to work for you.
You don't identify with incels anymore? As a dad?
I'm done with you tonight.
That's a good point to wrap this up. Folks, we'll be back on Sunday. We're going to be reviewing Rideshare, the movie. You can watch it online. So watch that. We'll review it next week. We have a casting of the 2018 NBA Finals coming out on Thursday, which is today if you're listening on the release day. And also, we did a table read of one of the things that was submitted to us, Rome Alone, starring Jim Rome as Jim Rome.
Ha!
Also Jim Everett, too. Jim / Chris Everett.
Jim Rome. Great. Great. Sports are good.
Yeah.
Is that a bad Jim Rome?
Compared to Devlin, who did the Jim Rome, it is, because Devlin does an incredible Jim Rome. Anyway, that's it. For Ken Jack and Troll Bowens, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me. Fuck you and all your expectations. I don't even want your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises all in your conversation. I hate people that feel entitled. Look at me crazy cause I ain't invite you. Oh, you important, you the moral to the story. You endorsing motherfucker, I don't even like you. Corrupt a man's heart with a gift. That's how you find out who you're dealing with. A small percentage you I'm building with. I want the credit if I'm losing or I'm winning on my